Damon and Tricia and I were talking about when you do an evaluation, how friendly should the evaluator be to begin with? You know, what should your, and what we talked about is being neutral. So I thought as a discussion item to begin with, that might be a good one. How, you know, if you were going to be evaluated, you would probably want the person that was evaluating you to be not brusque, right? To be somewhat friendly and all that kind of stuff. And can we use that as an idea of that, what dogs might like? So what we both think, I believe, is that you're kind of moderately friendly. Well, never mind. What I think is to be certainly moderately friendly and absolutely not, don't give the impression at all of being angry. And one of the issues that we have on a regular basis with people who do evaluations is that they're nervous. And if you're nervous, then what happens a lot of times is you look like this. And if the dog sees that, then they're likely to, especially if a dog reads a human face. Now, there are a lot of dogs that don't read human faces very well. These are dogs that have not grown up with a bunch of humans around, or the person that they grew up with doesn't have a whole lot of expressions or whatever. But it is probably important to kind of school your face to a certain amount of friendliness. Otherwise, the dog might read you as being angry when you're not angry, right? So when you say neutral, it really means that it's a kind of a neutral place internally as well as more than even than externally. It's like you're coming at it without expectations and you're coming at the dog with a feeling of who are you, what do you like, who do you want, you know, who do you want to have touch you, all that kind of stuff. Those are the important things that you're going to go with. So for some dogs, especially if you get a little dog, well, not even a little dog, a fearful dog, sometimes you probably want to be very friendly, goofy friendly, because you can't get them to actually relax enough to be evaluated. Whereas for other dogs, you don't need to do that. It's not nearly as necessary for that kind of thing. So like most things in the dog world, it depends on the individual dog, on the individual person. And of course, the other thing that happens in a shelter environment is two or three people might end up evaluating the same dog and have exactly really different demeanors about them. And it's like at Marin, there was one animal care tech who is the little dog whisperer. She could get little dogs to do pretty much anything any time. And a dog that would fail an evaluation, she would say, "But this dog is fine with me." And I'm sure that you see that at any other shelter that you go to, is that you know, or any other shelter where people work, that's one of the things that happens. There are also times, these are just things I thought of and I wanted to add, there are also times when a dog definitely should not be handled or evaluated, or you can do some preliminary handling and evaluation to figure out whether or not, how far you should go with the dog. And there are also times when maybe just one person should be in the room with the dog instead of two. Now, I know that a lot of evaluations, there is only one person in there, but actually there always should be two, and that's for safety. But I know that doesn't happen. Quite often that doesn't happen. So sometimes dogs that are pretty worried, if you can wait. I mean, one of the things that I have, or any of us who does training or evaluations or in-home consults and whatnot, is that you have the ability to just kind of wait before you start interacting with the dog. I saw a Rottweiler yesterday who was a little bit worried, and so I just kind of hung out, you know, until eventually the dog decides that I don't have a knife or a gun on me and I'm probably not going to immediately kill the dog or whatever. The daughter in the house, who was only 6 years old, she said, "I thought she was supposed to be training." So, anyway, so going slow is really not a problem at all. So this is a video I know some of you have seen, but this is a very, very fearful dog. This is Rogue, and Trisha's handling, of course. And
sacrificial one.
But this is Rogue. You see that okay? I wish we could just turn these. Okay, so you're seeing a lot of fear, right? She's showing classic signs of stress. And she's frozen, her eyes are really wide, she's staring into space, her mouth is closed, she's very stiff. An amazing number of new volunteers think there's nothing wrong.
Oh, that's
because she's not fighting.
Well, they don't know.
I think tolerate means they're fighting.
How do you hold the client
to Trisha's going to talk about that in just a sec. So this is a dog that is in a state of fight flight, right? But she is in the middle, so she is frozen. She can decide at any point whether to become aggressive or whether to just keep on trying to run away. Or try to remove it.
How far is the camera from her at this point? It's like, I know it looks close, but is it actually live?
It was a real camera, so it wasn't too close.
Okay.
So that was Rogue, and that is some really excellent handling of Rogue. So one of the things that if you look at the way Trisha was handling her, she did not allow her to put her head close to her head, so that there might be a bite or something like that. So there was that kind of thing that was handling. Did any of you think that she might bite?
Yes.
She looks so scary.
Yeah. So somebody asked a question?
Like how, because it seems like she's holding the collar so she wouldn't get bitten.
Yeah.
But how do you, to me, if I was holding that collar, like, how do you not telegraph that you're like, how do you handle them without telegraphing your caution?
No, actually, if you see, I am holding, there's a slip lead, and I am holding it close to the ring, so, and also using my hand in case she wanted to come around, if my hand would be there first before my face. And if you've watched it a couple of times, you'll see there a couple of times when I did drop the leash, and I guess I work a lot on instinct, and I think I felt like she was not going to do anything, but she was more frozen than anything else, I think. And so she did end up being adopted and did end up fighting somewhere.
You weren't talking to her, you were just
no,
talking.
I was.
You don't, the whole, actually that's another good question. Do you talk to your dog, to the dog or not? And some dogs are really comfortable if you do.
Right.
And some dogs, not necessarily so. So it really depends on the handler and how the dog responds to it. I do know that in a lot of cases, if you have a dog that's not like this, not like Rogue, but like other dogs, they're so agitated that if you talk to them in a high voice, they get more agitated.
Yeah.
So. Dropping your voice, keeping your voice low and soothing is probably a better way to go. This particular dog, as I recall, was a staff favorite. No, she was a volunteer favorite. A lot of the volunteers felt like she had been abused. We don't know that she'd been abused.
She actually, it was the finder who was a veterinarian who ended up adopting.
Was she the finder?
I think she was the finder. Or she somehow got familiar with the dog and fell in love and insisted on adopting her, and then.
And then she ended up bringing the dog back, and the dog was just exactly like this when she brought her back, and I guess she ended up biting as well. So, you know, we have to try to think about our clients. Actually, the Rottweiler I saw yesterday was a probably a 5 to 6 year old female dog that they've had for almost exactly a year. They got it from a rescue, and the rescue told them that it was a spayed female dog, that she was 3 years old, and Aspen. She said, I was just cleaning it out.
She was.
So, anyway, so they said that, Aspen, leave it. Come on. They said it was a 3-year-old dog. She was in a terrible condition. She apparently, her skin was really bad. She was 45 pounds and she should be about 65 pounds. So that's a couple of 20 pounds less. She bonded to them very quickly, bonded to the daughter very quickly, but they had high levels of resource guarding, which is normal for a lot of Rottweilers. Resource guarding is one of their behavior problems that pops up all the time. And every once in a while, occasional aggression to people and to strangers. Like the last time was 2 weeks ago when she was lying down, a guy walked by her, she reached up and she could hear her teeth click right here. So, and that really scared them. And she also has separation anxiety. Okay. So we got dog aggression, occasional people aggression, resource guarding, and separation anxiety. And these people wanted a dog. And they had always gotten dogs before from breeders or from, you know, whatever. And now they got, this was their first rescue dog. They tried to call Rocket Dog to say, can you help at least with the spaying? Because we now have to spay this dog that you said was spayed. And they didn't respond. So they have never really responded to them. They're very angry, obviously. And the end result is that they're living in a private hell. Because they can't, she's got the 6-year-old kid. She can't take the kid to ballet and gymnastics or whatever she goes to because she can't leave the dog at home alone. They rent their house, so she can't leave the dog out because they're working on separation anxiety. So she says they've worked up to about an hour and a half, but that doesn't give her time to do any of the things that she needs to do with her kid. At the same time, she can't take the dog to the park or to places with the kid because she's afraid of what the dog is going to do when she gets there. So they're in a horrible bind, and the end result was it was going to be a euthanasia. This is what you are working for when you are doing evaluations. This is the kind of thing that you have to think about all the time. Not how sweet that dog was when it was first being evaluated, but whether it does, separation anxiety, big deal. And if you see signs of it in the shelter, it should be noted, and you should actually try to test for it if at all possible, because it's so hard to live with a dog with separation anxiety. And so those are the people that you have to keep in mind when you're doing your evaluations, especially of a dog that you think could be problematic or that you would really like to see living in a different county than yours. Oh, we used to get them at the shelter all the time. Oh, yeah, well, as long as they go over in the East Bay someplace, it's okay. Never
mind. Is separation anxiety always severe, or can it have really mild symptoms?
There can be some mild symptoms, yeah. But clinical separation anxiety is really hard to live with. It's very, very difficult to live with. So because it keeps you a prisoner in your own home. Most dogs, what they have is kind of a don't leave me thing, and then they settle down. That's what most of them have, but some dogs have truly clinical separation anxiety. Besides me, anybody live with that? Yeah. It can be pretty intense.
How do you test for that?
Well, I'm going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. Well, I may as well just talk about it now because there's nothing. The thing that we used to do at the shelter, I don't know if they still do, is we'd at the end of the evaluation. You'd have developed a really good relationship by the dog by that time. And then you leave the dog alone. And then you watch the behavior that you might, you know, that might indicate some separation issues. So if the dog settles down very quickly, you can be pretty sure that they don't have it. If they go to the door, kind of scratch at the door, and then settle down, they're probably going to be okay. If they go to the door, scratch, settle down for a second, then start to howl, whine, scratch, try to get out in any way they can. And my personal belief is separation anxiety is really more of a form of claustrophobia, because the dog feels feels trapped and they can't get out, and they're often scared that they're going to be stuck there forever. Not that I think they think in terms of forever, but that kind of thing. So, and you can tell some. But it's hard, and especially in a shelter environment, because there's always dogs around and there's almost always people around.
In fact, when they leave the room, they can still hear our voices in the other room and stuff. When I was in Santa Cruz, they actually have a little house on the property that is separate from the shelter, and I could go leave the dogs in the little house and spy on them from there, and then they didn't hear people and smell things.
So, and if you can do that, it's really good. Again, separation anxiety, the problem with those dogs is that most of them are the most wonderful dogs in the world. They're affiliative, sweet, follow you around, just loving, all that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, you cannot have your dog with you 24/7. Most people cannot. And so what happens is they get passed from person to person to person because they really are a nice dog. And then their anxiety gets worse and worse with each person, and eventually they have to be put down, which is wrong. Yeah?
There's a free separation anxiety webinar coming up this Thursday by, what's her name?
Milena? Yeah. And Milena's good.
Yes,
she's expensive as hell.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is free?
It's free. It's a free webinar?
Because what she says, she does classical desensitization and counter conditioning. And she requires that her owners get a camera so that they actually do some surveillance. She kind of talks, she doesn't actually do in-person evaluations or in-person consults. She does it all over the phone. She's really nice, she's really good, and the webinar will probably be excellent. Okay, so now back to where we left off last time, which was resource guarding. Because I want to do a little bit more on resource guarding. So it is important to remember with resource guarding tests that they are tests, they're not solution-based. However, the ASPCA thinks of resource guarding as not being a particularly serious problem, and so they have not been, they're not requiring testing for it. It can be a very serious problem indeed. It does not always have to be, and certainly if a dog is starving and then has plenty of food, a lot of times the resource guarding drops down. But for instance, this Rottweiler, they have been working on the resource guarding for a year. They've got the food down, but if she gets something like that she sees as a high value item, then forget it. She's still not about to give it up, which is probably pretty intense, I would imagine. I remember one time going to somebody's house, and they had a Rottweiler that was resource guarding, and he did what is the most awful thing about resource guarding, which is that he decided in the moment which thing he was going to guard. It was not, you couldn't predict it. You couldn't predict whether it was going to be food. Sometimes he resource guarded his food, sometimes he didn't. It could have been his chewies, it could have been a piece of paper, it could have been something he stole. It didn't matter what it was. And this was a very elderly couple. And I said to the guy, I said, what do you do with this? Because this is a big dog and he scared me. And I said, what do you do? And he says, I just grab him like this and I go, don't you do that. Oh my God.
Did it work for him?
Well, I asked. I said, how's that working for you? And he mostly drops it and his wife is going. And I said, does he do it again? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, then it's not a good behavior model. Because, every time it's going to happen every single time. So, talk about it. It's scary. That would be, can you imagine doing that to this dog with his mouth? Forget it.
With the family with the Rottweiler and the six-year-old, how is he with all of the family?
She, sorry.
Yeah,
it's okay. She's just a little bit of a baby. She loves the whole family, but with the resource guarding, if she gets something...
Oh, no, I don't mean that, but I just mean, in general, is she...
She absolutely, and she likes children, which is a really big deal. And the reason I think she likes children is because I think she finds adults intimidating. And she likes mini people, smaller people.
Would this dog protect?
The child, yes, I think so.
Oh, resource guard?
I think she probably would.
Yeah.
And when we were discussing the whole prospect of euthanasia, the mom was trying to tell the girl that, that this is what they were thinking about doing, and I'm going, this is a bad idea. You know, yeah. With a 6-year-old kid, you just say that they're going to live someplace else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You know, you don't go, you don't, oh, we're going to kill this dog. But that was their call. They're the parents. And she's, so her mom was trying to explain this to her, and she said, well, you know what I'll say? And her mom said, yeah. And she said, no way. they're going to have one heck of a battle on their hands in order to make that happen. So in a lot of cases, possession can be worked on. In some cases, it can be eliminated. In some cases, it is just really awful. And this is a dog that... Do not touch me. But he is owned by a family with 2 children. And this is, actually, this was a few years ago. And they, Lab Rescue called me and they said that this dog had been turned in to Lab Rescue. And what did I think? And I said, drop dead. Don't even think about this dog. This is a terribly dangerous dog because he was biting the family and all kinds of stuff. This was just a minor part of it. Well, no, not minor, major. Okay. This whole thing. All right, you don't have to do that anymore. Lap or person guarding, generally small dogs, this can be pretty serious. So you should test for it when you're either testing it, you know, in a shelter or a rescue or whatever, if at all possible, because it is something where if the dog is on somebody's lap, they will bite somebody who comes over to them, or they'll bite another dog. So, for instance, if you had a dog with leash with lap guarding, you might not want to place that dog in a home with other dogs. Or you would place them with someone who's very savvy and who understands, you know, how to work with this and all that kind of stuff. There are ways you can work with lap guarding, for sure, but it can be pretty tricky. So it can be something that is you should know about if at all possible. This is an old video, but it certainly shows lap guarding. Hi.
What's that manicure, Trish? He goes over the top.
Aspen. Oh, good. She got it. This is our trusting dog.
Yes.
What?
You're after me. Oh, yeah. Or something.
So that's lap guarding. And, you know, the ways you do modification with lap guarding is oftentimes just to drop the dog on the floor. In the case of that dog, what would happen is if you put the dog on the floor, she'd get on the floor and then start biting up, or he, Binky, I don't know if it's male or female, would just start biting at anything on the floor. He was psychotic. I mean, he had kind of a true psychosis. And but a lot of times with lap guarding dogs, the easiest thing to do is to, you know, if a dog is sitting here and the person wants to come over and sit next to the other person, is if they back up and sit down right next to them. Just backing up and turning and not facing the dog, and that probably stops about 80% of it. Yeah, he's just kind of like, well, I'm going to go sit down now. And you sit down like this.
So are you ready for a dog?
No, but we could bring them in right now. You want to do that? I mean, we could. What?
How much longer are you then?
I was actually going to go through the rest of the test, and then, but you know, if you wanted. But we could bring the dogs in now. Okay. Is what I'm saying. Okay, so this is the dog who is resource guarding himself.
He's resource guarding his chewy against his lip.
From himself?
From him. So he's got his lip alive and he's then by this way, because his leg wants his food. There is a disconnect. It's a really good way to show the disconnect with a dog with all of the food that are. Because they are not in their front brain, and they're not happy.
This would go on fairly often.
Was that the only reason he resource guarded was himself and then nothing else?
He didn't resource, well, this guy was, I think he probably resource guarded other things. The guy was a great manager, just an absolute superb manager. So this was what he ended up guarding. But I would imagine he probably guarded other things at other times. And he was a superb dog. I met him a few times. He was a great dog. This was his only behavior problem. And this is the thing about resource guarding that I put this in for, is because it is not a behavior that they think about a whole lot. It is just a behavior that they have a reaction of, you know.
Instinct? So
it's an instinct. It's a survival instinct.
Yeah.
You know.
You've said that those are hard to break.
Oh, yes. Yeah, resource guarding.
Don't even try.
Well, you can certainly do some stuff with my little Karen Terrier that had resource guarding. I could take anything away from her.
Yeah.
But Tricia couldn't.
Yeah.
What? Are you using my name in vain?
Yeah.
We had one like I can do it, but my husband was always backing off, fearful, and she knew it. I'd come in and say, no,
and just take it,
and she, okay.
Yeah, well, the thing is that there are a lot of people who say, well, why can't your spouse behave like you? And the reason they can't is because they're not you.
Yeah, you would never be.
No, and it's a bad thing to try.
Yeah.
So, I've gotten this a lot with people who think, well, it's the age-old thing of, you know, the thing that we have on our forehead right here that says BLM, be like me. So everybody thinks, well, if you just did it the way I do it, everything would be fine. But nobody does it the way. So there's a...
But Abbott is included.
She's in the crate, yeah.
Yeah, that's
they're both in their crates. If she's not in her crate, she deserves it.
We brought Trisha a Rottweiler.
That's great. She can tell her Rottweiler story.
I don't think she does. It's really short.
Why don't you, sit in the background and get a chair and just sit with her? If she's doing good, if she's fine, then we don't need to put them in crates if they don't need to be in crates. Okay.
So,
yeah.
I walk a deaf dog. It's a mini Australian shepherd, and it has the double rural, so he's deaf and might have some vision problem. But we noticed he does that. They just adopted him a few months ago. But I don't know if it's necessarily resource guarding or if it's something of more like an OCD thing. Is there a way to tell the difference between whether it's resource guarding or if it's just like a...
And she does that to for her own, when she gets something, she does it to herself?
Like, she won't do it in her crate. He won't do it in his crate. But when we come back from a walk and I'm trying to, like, settle down, he gets toys and, like, you know, he'll be with his toy and then all of a sudden start not viciously attacking his leg, but he goes after his leg like that, but it's more of, like, up by the hip. But if you don't stop it and get another toy for him to do, he'll continue doing it. But he doesn't do it in his crate, so I kind of suggest you just keep it in the crate when they're not home so that it doesn't escalate.
Yeah, that sounds like it might be OCD.
Okay.
Yeah. No matter what, though, with any kind of behavior like that, that you have to interrupt it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So your advice is right on, I think. If he doesn't do it in his crate.
So I think they want to eventually have him out of the crate, but I don't know if that's such a good idea.
Does he always go to one spot on his leg?
Mostly. They've even talked to the vet about whether it's like an itch or something, but they can't tell for right now. So they're
They can try putting a little bit of something that he doesn't like there in that part of the leg or something. Bitter apple. The thing about bitter apple is you can't get it on yourself, because if you do, you'll be sorry forever. It's pretty bad. So these are two little tests that I actually really, I was sitting at this morning thinking, I don't really even know that I want to put these in here, but I'm going to say what they are just in case. So a startle and reprimand test. The startle test is to see how quickly the dog startles at something that surprises them and how quickly he recovers. So with most dogs that have problem behaviors, their recovery rate's too slow. That's the reason why they have behavior problems, because if they see something and then they bark at it, and then most dogs will go, oh, that was stupid, I shouldn't have barked at it, or decide to bark at it more or whatever, but they have a fairly quick recovery rate. But for many dogs that have problems, they have a very slow recovery rate, or they cannot recover at all. So these would be a dog that if you take walking, has reactivity issues, they get overly excited on the walk, and after that first dog that they see that they become reactive to, they cannot calm down after that at all. So that's a really slow recovery rate. It's very common. And so that is, so that's what you're looking for in the startle test. How quickly, how badly the dog startles, and how quickly they can recover. However, having said that, I would say that in most cases, you don't need to actually test. You can watch during the rest of the test and see how well the dog does. But you should take note of it. How fast does the dog recover? You know, what is needed for the dog to recover? Does he need a really calm place to recover? Can he recover fairly quickly in a highly excited environment or whatever? So that's a startle test. Now the reprimand test for some dogs is really important, and for some dogs it's absolutely uncalled for. So if you did a reprimand test on Flocka, she would fall into a little puddle and die.
Yeah.
And that would be that, right? But if you do it to Aspen, she goes... Right? So, you know, so it's not a big deal if you reprimand her. I mean, I think I've seen her actually sorry maybe once or twice, a few more times than that, but not very often. So it really depends on the test. Now, the reason this is important is because when you live in a home with your dog, do you ever do something along the lines of yell at them?
Yeah.
No? Nobody's talking. How many people never yell at their dog? Or anybody else they're living with. So if you are somebody who doesn't do that, then that's fine. But most people yell at dogs. If they steal something off the counter, they yell at them. And what you want to find out is whether or not, you remember, you're not evaluating for yourself. You're evaluating for everybody else. And under those circumstances, you want to find out whether or not the dog cares if you yell at him. Now, you don't have to do it. I mean, we had one evaluator at Marin who was a little bit over the top with it. And you don't have to be like that, but you can just find out whether or not the dog feels that this is they're sorry they did something. And what you're looking for is a high degree of, I suppose you can call it pack behavior, because they want, what feeling sorry means is please let me back into the group. That's really what that behavior is. Oh, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me so I can come back and be within your good graces again. And so it's great if they do that. There are some dogs that really just do what Aspen does and just blows you off. And what that'll tell you is it's going to be probably easy to train but hard to modify. It's hard. You can train the dog because they're that doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. They can be very intelligent. But if you're trying to stop a behavior problem, they have to think that, and especially if you're going to try to do it with any kind of reprimand, they're just not going to listen to you. So it's a good thing to know. Is it going to make a big difference between whether the dog is adoptable or not adoptable? No. I know that there might be cases where a dog actually is, gets aggressive, but I think I've probably seen that maybe once. And this is not a highly normal thing. The slip leads? And they were in the car. Yeah, I don't know where it is. Maybe we didn't bring them, but I thought it was just in the car. Okay. All right, so All right, and then canine sociability. So we're not going to get to that right now. We will do some dogs, okay? And then we'll talk about canine sociability a little bit later. All right.